By recent counts, about a third of all Americans, adults and children, are overweight to the point of obesity. That's a lot of weight being carried around on a lot of bodies with many potential health issues down the road. The University of Oregon is home to the Prevention Science Institute, and one of the focuses of the institute is a health promotion and obesity prevention program. So what is prevention science and how does it work on obesity or anything else? That's the general line of discussion in this month's edition of Curious, where research meets radio. Our guest is Beth Stormshack, who is the Prevention Science Institute director. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
Good to have you here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's start with the basic idea about prevention science and talk about the creation of PSI and what it's supposed to do.
Well, great. The Prevention Science Institute is a research institute here at the University of Oregon, and it's a multidisciplinary research institute that reflects the field of prevention science, which is a multidisciplinary field focused on understanding how to prevent negative outcomes from happening in people's lives. One of the things that's interesting about prevention science as a field is that it really brings together different disciplines like psychology, medicine, social work, education. And it's a discipline that tries to understand some of the problems we face in society and tackle them from that the lenses of different disciplines so that we can all come together to come up with creative solutions to solving some of these problems.
So in your own case, for example, you come from the Department of Counseling, Psychology, and Human Services, is that
right? That's
right. In the Department of Education, okay, so all kinds of things going on there. Can we assume from the name of the Prevention Science Institute, this is somewhat less focused on people with issues that need attention now and a bit more focused on how to prevent people from getting there in the future?
That's a good question. It's true that the majority of our work here does focus on children ages, 2 to 18. But what's interesting about prevention is that you're always preventing. Even if you're intervening with, say, a group of children who have behavior problems in school, and they already are exhibiting those behavior problems, with a prevention program, you're preventing those problems from getting worse over time. So even if the work that you're doing is tackling people who already are showing symptoms, you are hopefully preventing things from getting worse down the road.
That was essentially the question. So you're not writing off the people who have a set of behavior or other conditions now. You're saying you can help them correct those behaviors.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So specifically on obesity prevention and health promotion, and I got to be careful not to say obesity promotion and health prevention.
People make that mistake a lot, actually.
Oh, it's so good to hear because I kept doing it the other day. So what was the starting point for getting into this this line of focus?
Well, what's interesting is that, for a long, long time here at the University of Oregon, we've had some real strengths across a number of our departments in the prevention of problem behavior, substance use, behavior problems at school, and some mental health outcomes that kids experience over the lifespan. So that's really been our target area. But what we've realized over the years, of course, is that a lot of these things are all related to health problems that kids are facing as well, such as obesity, poor nutrition, poor sleep patterns, and these things all kind of occur in a cluster. But we were really missing a group of researchers here that had that specific focus that could and would bring that into our institute. So a few years back when the university decided to engage in the cluster hiring process, what we did here at the University of Oregon is we really created this sort of faculty-forward model, and we asked faculty to come up with a cluster hire proposal that they thought would really enhance the portfolio of work that they were doing. What we're always trying to do here at the University of Oregon is build on our strengths in science and education and figure out things that we're doing well that we could really expand on and become excellent at. And so at that time, we decided it would be really exciting for us to write a proposal to hire in the area of obesity prevention and health promotion, and we did that. And, of course, as you might know, the proposal was funded by the Balmers, and we were really excited to have them contribute to this hiring cluster. And we actually are nearing the end of it now. We have hired 4 faculty in the College of Education with this focus, and we are hoping to hire by the end of the year 2 additional faculty, 1 in biology and 1 in human physiology, and that will round out our cluster of 6 new faculty on campus.
So with the grant funding that comes from the likes of the Balmers who put the money in, the family that put the money in for this cluster, is it an ongoing thing? I mean, we talked to the folks at the volcanology cluster a month ago. I mean, is it sustainable or does the cluster time out after a while if there's no other sponsor to come along?
No, it won't time out. These faculty are going to be here with us, we hope, for a long time. And, of course, they're engaged in research and scholarship, and they'll be writing grants to a variety of different federal agencies and working with researchers that are already here to create new ideas and new grant mechanisms and plans for the future. So, yeah, we do not see this as something that's going to sort of stop after a few years. We're excited about building the capacity in this direction and hope it will continue for a long time.
We're talking in our monthly Curious segment, Curious Where Research Meets Radio. It's where we talk to folks at the University of Oregon about things they're doing. Beth Stormshack is the Philip Knight Chair in the Department of Counseling, Psychology, and Human Services in the Department of Education. She is the Health Promotion and Obesity Prevention Coordinator and the Director of the Prevention Science Institute. So we're talking about obesity and other things that go on in prevention science. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So obviously, obesity an issue for quite a few years now. I imagine there were some quite well-developed ideas for approaching it. So what came in the door as you began to staff up the cluster, and what was there already? What's the basic approach, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I don't think that obesity prevention is an easy problem to solve. If it were, we would have already figured it out, right? One of the first interviews I did on this, someone said, well, are you just going to tell people to eat less and exercise more, because that doesn't work? And obviously, if all we had to do was to tell people to eat less and exercise more, we would have figured this out a long time ago.
True.
I think that obesity prevention is multifactorial. There are lots of different factors, including culture and context and biological mechanisms and genetics. And it's just a complex problem. And that's why we are excited to hire across multiple disciplines to really take a look at this from the different lenses that it needs to be looked at from. So far, we've hired in a number of interesting areas. We've hired a woman who specializes in health disparity, understanding why obesity occurs much more frequently in low-income populations. We've hired some specialists in self-regulation, so people trying to really disentangle the impact of managing your behavior and self-regulating your impulses and how that impacts food intake and obesity. And we've hired a public health specialist, someone who's really interested in looking at how we can widely disseminate programs and really examine how we can impact this problem from a public health perspective. So we're excited about having all those folks come together and converge around some novel ideas to really look at this problem.
Let's talk about the health disparity part of that. I mean, the fact that low-income people tend to be more prone to obesity, I imagine that has something to do with diet, but I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that is, you know, I'm sure one of the factors for sure. Access to nutritious and high quality food is another, and there could be other factors as well. So that it'll be really interesting for us to kind of create, to have that perspective as we move forward and look at that carefully.
Beth, what are the numbers these days? I mean, I said about a third, but I might have been a little too general there.
About right.
Is it? Okay, about a third of both adults and children.
Mm-hmm. A third of children who are overweight, not necessarily characterized as obese yet, and a third of adults are about a third. You know, it's a real approximate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how has the incidence grown over the years?
It has grown quite a bit, actually, and the rates have been increasing over time. So we've definitely seen an increase in it.
And is there... Obviously, if you could, as you pointed out, if you could just come to one set of circumstances, like, oh, there it is, let's just fix that, and bam, we're done here. But what are among the factors that appear to be contributing to the rise in people getting heavier?
Well, there's so many factors. I mean, there's really, context, of course. You know, people definitely walk less, and we've structured communities so that people don't get as much exercise, right? Nutrition is a huge factor. Sugar intake in people's diets has increased tremendously over the years. And there's biological factors, too, where, we're looking at how prenatally people are prone to some of these problems because of, prenatal factors that impact how they're going to be able to process food and interact with their environment. So there's just so many factors to look at when you're looking at a complex problem like this.
Well, and as you pointed out, there, people say, well, you just tell people to eat less and exercise more. So if you just go on those two prongs, I don't know you don't, but you're talking about what goes into the body and how it's burned off. Does either one take precedent over the others, or do they get looked at with equal emphasis?
Well, I think in our work we would look at those equally. They're both important, and I think one thing we've learned certainly over the years from trying to prevent obesity is that no one thing is going to be the magic pill, right? It's definitely going to take a multi-pronged approach.
All right, let's take a call here. We have Sandy in Mount Shasta on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Elizabeth Stormshack from the Prevention Science Institute at the University of Oregon. Hi, Sandy.
Yeah, hi. Interesting topic. Just coincidentally this morning I was reading a paper called Obesity Problem Solution or Both. It's a paper by Vincent Felitti from Kaiser Permanente down in San Diego. What I wanted to know, have you guys heard about the ACEs study? Are you incorporating that information from adverse childhood experiences as a cause of obesity?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Awesome.
That's another big impact for a lot of childhood health problems, actually. Early adverse experiences and traumatic experiences in early childhood, for sure.
And it leads to a lot of different things in life. Is that correct, Sandy?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really the Kaiser Permanente people who were perplexed because they had so many people who were losing massive amounts of weight and then dropping out of their program before they really accomplished their goal. And they discovered that many of the people they were dropping out had been being overweight as a protection against sexual advances of other people because they'd been abused when they were younger.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all kinds of things.
What's interesting about early adverse experiences is that they can cause all kinds of sort of biological response for people that does impact their health later on, like, for example, different cortisol patterns or inflammatory responses. And all of those are part of a big picture of health problems that lead to later health problems later in life.
So does an emotional or mental situation lead to physiological changes that last?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we have lots of research now to suggest that.
Wow. So in your work at the Prevention Science Institute on obesity prevention, I mean, is there a particular age that you're focusing on above all others?
Most of the people that we've hired are focusing on adolescents right now, but you could focus on this across the lifespan for sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have kind of hired in a cluster of folks that are really targeting adolescents, and we've done that on purpose so that they can work more together as a team.
And where is the attention applied? At home, at school, and others?
We're just starting, our plan is to definitely integrate schools and community health and home for sure.
So is there something like an anti-obesity playbook? Is there an accepted approach at this point among researchers, or is it still proving to be rather elusive?
Well, I think there are lots of different programs out there, and there are certainly a lot of different programs that have had quite a bit of success. So it's really just figuring out, what are the different components, what are the different ingredients that we think are the most effective, and also how can we help people make long-term changes in their lives. And sometimes for all the prevention that we do, and now I'm not really just talking about obesity prevention, but prevention generally, prevention tends to be a dose of something at one time point, and then one of the challenges is to be able to sustain that over time. And I think we see that with obesity as well as some of the other problems that we focus on here at the Prevention Science Institute, like behavior problems and substance use.
Well, I was going to ask you to widen out the focus just a bit from obesity anyway, so this is a perfect time. Let's talk about the other kinds of issues that you have worked on. You mentioned generally substance abuse and behavioral problems in school and then poor mental health outcomes later in life. Mm-hmm. Those are the three major areas. Can you give us an example of a particular program that has met some recent success?
Yeah. Most of my research has really focused on family-centered mental health embedded within schools. So for a long time, I've worked with a model called the Family Checkup, and we've really been studying how to apply a family-centered approach within schools to children and families who might need a little extra support at different times and provide parents with some support to increase parenting skills and focus in a little bit more on reducing behavior problems and helping their students succeed. I've been working with that program for a while now, primarily at the middle school years, and we found over time that program really leads to improved problem behaviors for kids, improved academic success, and reductions in substance use as these kids hit adolescence and the young adult years. So the prevention program delivered during the middle school years has an impact on substance use and problem behavior even as kids leave high school and enter adulthood. So those are some really nice long-term outcomes associated with this type of intervention.
Does the family checkup in part help improve communications between family members in ways that perhaps they just had sort of let get strained or non-existent?
Mm-hmm. That's part of it. And it also enhances parenting skills. Sometimes parents don't know exactly how to deal with certain problems, especially during the middle school years, which can be tough for families. So it helps kind of bolster up some parenting skills, positive parenting in the home, target, say, homework routines and support for families and helping their child through school. The family checkup is really adapted and tailored to what parents need at that particular time, and so the particular type of intervention a family gets would be different depending on what their issues are and what they're struggling with. But it's really at its heart a parent skills intervention, and it also helps to motivate parents to stay engaged with their child and help their child succeed through the school years.
This is our Curious segment on the Jefferson Exchange, where research meets radio. We're talking to the University of Oregon once again, as we do every month. Elizabeth Beth Stormshack is the Prevention Science Institute Director at the U of O. And you can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about what prevention science is and how it operates. 800-838-3760 to join by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Something you just said rang out to me, because we were dealing with the foster kids when they were telling me they didn't have any homework was a constant problem. I just wonder what you were able to change in homework routines between kids and parents there.
Mm-hmm. Well, part of homework routines is really about helping parents track homework, helping parents understand what's due and when, helping kids bring it home, creating a behavior plan or incentive plan for families so that parents can help reward kids for doing homework at home, provide support. And teachers can be part of the plan, too, and they can help support and reward kids for completing it and turning it in. So it really involves targeting all the different people in a kid's life and creating a structure for it to get done. And sometimes that's just not in place for lots of kids.
So when you're dealing with anything, whether it's, you know, not turning in homework or obesity or substance abuse or just general problem behavior, are there some real common threads in prevention, some first places you tend to look in prevention science?
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, I mean, across the range of things that you deal with at the Prevention Science Institute, I just wonder if in any of the promotion/prevention programs or any places where you're trying to shape behavior, what are some of the first places you look for evidence of things that are getting a little out of skew?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think that if we just are, again, talking about child development, if we look at kids across all the contexts that they interact, so families, do they have positive support at home from a parent or parents or caregivers or whoever is their family? Do they have positive peers? Do they have support at school? Do they have some friends that they can go to? Do they have teachers that are supporting them and helping them? Are they achieving in school? Do they have the capacity to achieve? Are they receiving the supports in school that they need to be successful? So when we look at kids, we really look at them as people that are living within multiple contexts. They are living in a family, usually. They are living in schools and housed in schools, and they have peers, and all of those things influence their development over time. So prevention approach really looks at all those different contexts of interaction and tries to intervene in each one to make sure that each one is successful.
Do you have to form partnerships with school districts to be able to do some of this? I'm just trying to figure out how.
Absolutely, because
you have to get around some healthcare privacy issues and stuff like that.
Absolutely, and all the families that we've worked with fully consent to being part of our process, and they're entering into a partnership with us.
So is there one program above all others that you're most proud of coming out of the Prevention Science Institute?
Well, I'm proud of all the work we've done, actually. There's so many things we've done, and each one of them has been successful in different ways, and we've learned from each one in different ways, and some of them haven't been as successful. But I think one of the things we've moved toward now that I'm studying currently that I'm excited about is that we've taken our family-centered approach that I just talked about, and we've moved it to an online program for parents. And we're just starting to test that in 6 middle schools across the state of Oregon, 2 in the rural area, 2 in our Eugene area, and 2 in the Portland area. And parents are going to enroll, and we're going to give folks an opportunity to delve into the intervention from an online platform so they can do it at home, basically. And they don't have to interact with anyone. They can do it themselves. And then we're going to see how that works and if that's effective for really helping people manage those difficult middle school years. So we're going to test that. And so far we've had a lot of interest in it. When we've started recruiting just a few weeks ago, and we've already had 200 families call us and has shown interest in signing up for it. So we're hoping this is a really kind of new way to go with family-centered approaches for schools. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that turns out.
That sounds like an impressive number. Is it more than you expected?
Yes, it's a lot more than we expected for the first few weeks of trying to recruit families. So we're excited about that. That's a great problem for us to have.
It is. And so how did you recruit?
You asked, do we partner with schools? We absolutely do. We've partnered with 4 middle schools in the state of Oregon, and we had the principals just send out a letter saying, hey, family, are any families interested in doing this? And that's how many we got returned. So,
Beth, do the researchers in the research cluster or anywhere within the prevention sciences, do they teach classes too, or are they just researchers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We are all professors at the University of Oregon, and we, all of us, teach classes.
So what do you see coming down the road? I mean, we're talking about primarily about the health promotion and obesity prevention cluster right now, but what else do you see coming into prevention science down the road potentially?
Well, there's lots of opportunities. I mean, like this project I'm talking about now where we're moving our intervention online, I'm excited about enhancing some of the intervention and prevention programs we have with technology. I think that's going to be a really interesting way to go to reach families that sometimes we can't reach as easily. I'm interested in reaching more rural families who sometimes are living far away from the school. It's hard for them to get into the school to get services, so providing something that's more online or that they can access their smartphones, I'm excited to test that and understand if that's effective for reaching out to some of our more rural populations, especially in the state of Oregon.
All kinds of stuff going on at the Prevention Science Institute at the University of Oregon, where Beth Stormshack is the director. She's also the Philip H. Knight Chair in the Department of Counseling, Psychology, and Human Services in the Department of Education, and she heads up the Health Promotion and Obesity Prevention Cluster. Beth Stormshack, thanks for joining us today in The Exchange.
Okay, thank you.